The Sour Hour is meant for the serious brewer. The Sour Hour may contain some seriously funkified content. The Sour Hour is not for the faint of heart. So exercise some damn discretion, would you please? Sheesh. And now, here's the Sour Hour with Jay Goodwin.
Welcome to a very special remote edition of the Sour Hour. We are not here in downtown Concord, but we are in lovely Windsor, California. It's a beautiful day, although it's a little muggy where we are, but there's a good reason for that. I am here with Justin, who's running the board. Hey, Justin.
Hi, it's good to see you.
Moscow's in the house, too. Hey, Moscow.
What's up, guys?
Devo over in the corner. How do we look?
No, I should turn her on, too.
Yeah.
Figures.
I've never been able to do that.
And
you look fantastic.
There you go. Our special guest slash host today is Vinny Chilerzo from Russian River Brewing Company.
Never heard of him.
And we are at his brand new brewery in Windsor in the cool ship room right now with a batch of wort cooling just off to our right, which is extremely special.
That is 30 barrels of wort.
Unbelievable.
There right now.
That is so awesome.
It doesn't look like it. It looks like so much less.
I know it does.
Yeah. It's deceiving.
That's 13 foot square, 15 inches deep, and that's maybe about 10 inches of liquid in there.
Yeah, wow.
That's it.
Unbelievable. Wow. So not enough to dive into is what you're saying.
No, and the safety crew wouldn't like that either.
No.
There's no lifeguard on duty.
There's no cameras in here, right?
No.
Except for the ones that we brought.
Your cameras are the only cameras.
Well, awesome. Well, thanks so much for hosting us and having us. This is great.
Oh, yeah.
Here the I'll call them the Brewing Network crew, got a tour earlier today. How did that all go?
The tour was fantastic.
Yeah.
We had not just the Brewing Network, but the Hop Grenade also.
Oh, you can say that, but I won't.
So it was fun. It was a good crew, and even took them through sensory.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
Got to taste a little bit sensory blind. Just showed them the whole brewery from brew house to open top fermenters, closed top fermenters, packaging. We had bottled Blind Pig earlier today, so that's what we were pouring on the tour along the way.
Everyone was freaking out over the bottled on date today.
A 4-hour-old Blind Pig.
That's amazing.
And then finish them up in the barrel room, and then ultimately the cool ship. We filled this earlier today about 11, so hence the mugginess in here. I think it's worth it.
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. This beautiful room. I hear it was a lot steamier earlier, so we're kind of coming into the prime.
Yep.
Maybe you could give us a little bit for our listeners or those who are not following us on the live stream, maybe a little visual tour of the room we're sitting in right now.
Yeah, so the wood is becomes a really important part of a cool ship room. The windows can become a part of it if you have the ability to design the room properly. So, for instance, if you are in here and you can see the top of the tank of the cool ship, it's about the same height as the bottom of the windows. And so that was done on purpose so that as the air comes in, it's almost a convection effect where the air comes in over the top of the wort and then carries out. That's not absolutely needed, but the fact that we designed this from scratch, we were able to do that. We actually went back to a Jean de Klerk brewing book to find some of that information.
Excellent.
Which I thought was pretty cool. So for those of you that listening don't know, Jean de Klerk is probably the most important brewing scientist, and he's a Flemish Belgian gentleman. I don't know when he passed away. It was in the 1900s at some point. I'm not sure exactly, but so he has some of the greatest writings about brewing knowledge, and did so and wrote about cool ships. And it was amazing that you can go back to a book that was written literally decades ago and still have relevant information. The wood is North Carolina pine, and so you want a soft, porous wood so that as the room steams up and the wild yeast and bacteria are coming in through the windows, that it actually will get inoculated and impregnated into the wood. And that becomes a really important component of a cool ship room, because that helps over time inoculate the beer. Because when it's really steamy in here initially, it's steaming up and then it's dripping back down. And so what's in the wood can help contribute to the microflora in the wort over time. And so we'll come back in tomorrow morning. And the wort went in today at 11. It was probably 190, 200 degrees, mm-hmm. maybe a little bit less than that. And then
is that from an intentional step down, or is that just through the process?
Yeah, it's just going through the process, and the fact that the brew house is 300 feet away,
sure,
that it just cools down by the time. At some point, we're going to make a direct line all the way from the brew house down here and insulate it as well. But for now, it works fine.
Yeah.
And then tomorrow morning, we'll come in. This room will be, that's steamy and sticky and hot right now. It'll be downright cold in the morning. The wort will be about 66 degrees.
Perfect. Wow.
And it's not going to get freezing tonight. So this is one of the first times we've done this. We've done it once before when it wasn't freezing at night. And the idea that we want to try is that, in traditional lambic production in Belgium, it's always on a night when it's really cold. Mm-hmm. And I remember Jean at Cantillon once making a famous statement that we are spontaneous brewers. That also means we are weathermen, or something like that. And because they're always watching the weather, like that's, if it's going to be a warmer night, they won't brew. And whether you believe in global warming or not, there are less cold days in the winter right now in Belgium. And Cantillon has expanded.
Yeah.
So Jean talks about how they have less opportunities to brew. And so they need to brew more often.
Mm-hmm.
But we've found that it's okay to do spontaneous beer when it's not as cold out. And we've already done a couple batches so far. It's too early to tell what the final product's going to taste like, but knowing what the beer, as it's in early fermentation, tastes like now compared to what we know from spontaneous batches we've done at the pub, it's tasting really good. So
that's great.
We might try a summer spontaneous beer.
Hey, why not?
What I really want to do is try a fall spontaneous beer when all of our neighboring wineries are in fermentation.
Yeah.
And they've got their whole thing going. So that'll be cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
This room is about the size of a extra large 3-car garage, and every surface is wood. You were telling us off the air where the wood came from.
Yeah, the wood came from Sierra Nevada, Mills River, and that's why I say it's North Carolina pine. And
it feels like North Carolina in here right now.
It certainly does. I think I just killed a mosquito.
Yeah. So the
thank you.
At the beginning of the process, we wanted to just build our bars out of. I should preface it with every brewery we've had, where we've had along the way, we've had something from Sierra Nevada in the, whether it's typically like a flow meter or a pump or whatever.
I saw some of the employees downstairs, but they were not a permanent feature, right?
No, there were 6 employees from Sierra Nevada here earlier.
It's always something.
Anyways, I wanted something from Sierra Nevada to not only to tip our hats to the Grossmans for all they've done for the industry, but also, they're close friends of ours, Natalie and mine. And it started out to be just the tasting bars. And one of our trips to Mills River, to the North Carolina brewery, I saw this barn full of leftover lumber because they had to clear a bunch of trees. They milled it. And most of the wood in their pub in North Carolina is actually from their property. So they had leftover. So my first idea was, it'd be cool to tip our hats with building the bars out of Sierra Nevada, North Carolina wood. And then I saw how much when they sent us the list, and I asked Ken if I could buy a little bit more. And he ended up giving us all of this, which was really sweet of them. And so we built this whole room out of wood from Sierra Nevada's Mills River property. The bar is behind me.
There is a bar inside of the cool ship room, which is just about the coolest thing in the world.
There are many strategically placed bars along the tour route.
Yeah.
This is the end cap.
And then the bar in the brew house where the guided tour starts is oak from their property. And then the hostess, Dan, when you walk into the restaurant here, is also from Sierra Nevada.
Excellent. So I just want to bring this up quickly. Scott and I, after we opened our first Hop Grenade, we're looking around California for a second Hop Grenade. And we did look around Santa Rosa, right near the Russian River Pub, you know, the first location. And one of our philosophies for that location was, if we could just get Russian River scraps, we could build a bar.
Yeah, the people waiting for lunch is 40 minutes wait. Right.
Like, we would be okay. Yeah. And in hearing you talk about this, you've sort of done the same from Ken's scraps.
Yeah, exactly.
You've built your cool ship out of Ken's scraps.
Pretty much.
And yeah, proud of it, as we would have been. So
I'm so proud of it. Yes. We do 6 tours a day if people sign up. It's, you know, for the guided tour, self-guided tour, people can do anytime they want. And so it becomes a part of the tour. So, like, it's weird that you go to a brewery and then, like, we talk about Sierra Nevada on every tour.
It's great, though.
but it really shows the camaraderie of the industry, how collegial it is, but also our friendship with the Grossmans. And that is just, it's a really cool story. And everyone in the beer industry, like, there is no one in the craft beer industry that would be where they're at without Sierra Nevada and Ken Grossman. So why not tip our hats to them?
No, it's really great.
So how long do you expect for this? I mean, it's still obviously very fresh smelling and looking wood. What is the typical timeline for it's going to be impregnated and it's imparting its own whatever?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and I have no idea. I mean, you would traditionally not have your roof be so tall.
It's vaulted.
But this was as much for us a part of the tour, and we wanted it to be really pretty and beautiful, and we wanted the height of this end of the building to match the brew house, so they're both at 50 feet. And so it meant there were some architectural components that we wanted to definitely include. So I don't know the answer to that question. I will say, though, that a lot of breweries, when they build a cool ship room, they'll come in with bottles of their spontaneous beer, or a lot of breweries use Cantillon or Dreyfontaine or Boone or, you know, Gerardin, whomever, from Belgium, and they'll, you know, NASCAR moment.
Are you serious?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Whoa.
But we didn't do that at all. It was very natural. The very first batch, though, that we made didn't start fermenting, and we actually had to inoculate with some Saccharomyces. So that... Cynambic. So we call our spontaneous fermented beer Cynambic. So that's Sonoma and Lambic contracted together, because Lambic's a protected word in Belgium, much like champagne is to sparkling wine. And so we make Cynambic, and the first batch, you know, it's like a week goes by in the barrel and it's not fermenting, and then another week. And now at this point, there's mold growing on the top of the wort. So I added some Saccharomyces.
But only the first batch? Like, after that, there's enough in here?
No, it was because we opened the windows, all of the windows all the way up, and it actually cooled down too fast.
I see.
So there is a science behind spontaneously fermenting, that you actually don't want it to cool down too fast. You want it to be really gradual. And so we've actually found that doing the first brew of the day, because the brew house can do 8 brews a day, but we do 4 brews a day, and 4 in 16 hours, so 2 shifts. And so the first batch, we did it the final brew of the day or late in the day. So we didn't fill the cool ship till it was dark out. And then we came back the next morning and it was already cool. And it didn't ferment, but it was because it cooled too fast. So now we just crack a couple of the windows, and then it cools down really slow. And I think the best way to describe how spontaneous beer gets inoculated is like, if anyone's been in the restaurant industry and they make you take the food safety test, and they say, like, between, I don't know what the temperatures are, like, you know, 70 degrees and 120 or 30, whatever it is, like, that's the red zone. Like, you don't want your food at that temperature, and you probably don't want your food at that temperature, but it's really good for wort. And so that's the temperature. And so you want to be in this range as slow as, you know, for as long a period as possible. All the while, you want it to cool down by the next day, so that it's, you can go into barrels and then let it carry on. Because at some point, you can start getting off flavors. But so after that, second batch on, it's been perfect. and it ferments in a week. It starts fermenting within a week. So Al, our funky brewer, as we call him, he'll come in the morning, connect a pump to the cool ship down into the funky cellar, and then fill 10 wine barrels. And then it'll sit for a week before it starts fermenting. And then it'll stay in the bottle for up to 30, or in the barrel for up to 36 months.
Wow.
And
long time.
And then we'll blend multiple batches of Cinnambic to make what we call beatification, our 100% spontaneous fermented beer.
My favorite.
But in Belgium, a goose is very traditional blend of lambic, 3 year, 2 year, and 1 year. And here we use like 9, 10 different batches and blend them disproportionately, almost like a painter. Like if you're a painter and you said, well, I could have 10 colors or I could have 3. Mm-hmm. It might be interesting to do something with 3, but you have more colors to pick from. So that's how we look at it. So we don't follow the blending like a traditional lambic brewer does.
Awesome.
So
I want to get more into kind of the things that, you know, you feel like you want to be following. I think it depends on the time of year also, but we do have a beer open in front of us. Maybe we'll talk a little bit about this and then get to a quick break.
Yeah. So this is a brand new beer. We've made it once before, but we've never sold it. We've used it at a couple festivals, a couple beer dinners or whatnot, but we've never poured it at either of our restaurants yet. It's called Intinction. We have two different versions of this we're going to taste today. We've got Intinction Sauvignon Blanc, which is what we have here, and then we'll do Intinction Merlot in a little bit. So this is a Pilsner aged, base beer is a Pilsner, so it's fermented cold. It's about a third of the BUs as STS pills, and it's not dry hopped. So it ends up finished, I think, about 12 or 13, but it only goes into the barrels at like 20 or something like that, so it's not that bitter.
Do you use any other cold fermented base for mixed fermentation?
This is the only one we've done so far.
Okay.
Yeah, and so then the Pilsner ages in Sauvignon Blanc barrels from one of our favorite wineries, Mary Edwards, and then we pull it out of the barrels about 4 or 6 months later and blend in Sauvignon Blanc juice. About 20 or 30% of the fermentables is the Sauvignon Blanc juice. Put it back into barrels, let it sit for another 5-6 months, pull it out, bottle keg it. So right now we're in the middle of bottle conditioning. If you taste it and smell it, there's a little bit of sulfur there. It blows off pretty quick, but that's kind of what we're waiting to age out now. But that may just stick around too from the grape juice. And
I think it was gone before the time I took my first
It goes pissed, and there's no bacteria in this beer. It's just it's 3 strains of Brettanomyces that come from a local wine lab, and then we bottle condition it with a wine yeast, and then let it sit. And so we should release it in about a month or so. But it's a really pretty beer. It's light,
it's
crisp.
I'm also surprised that you say there's no bacteria, because I was feeling like it was leaning a little on the lactose side.
Isn't that interesting?
Is that the grape?
It's the grape juice and just how acidic
interesting
the acidity is. I mean, there it might have picked up a little bit of bacteria from the barrel room.
Okay,
this was actually barreled mostly at the old production brewery. And then the barrels were moved over here, and then we processed it. Mm-hmm. But and the grape juice comes from one of the oldest grape, or it's the grapes, and then they press the grapes for us into grape juice from one of the oldest grape growing families in Sonoma County, Dutton.
Wow.
And Dutton has Dutton Vineyards, they have Dutton Winery, and then there's Dutton Goldfield, which is one of the brothers have that. So really, it's a new project for us. So Intinction is a religious term to dip your bread to take sacrament. And so any beer we do moving forward with grapes will be Intinction. So it'll be Intinction Sauvignon Blanc, Intinction Merlot, Intinction whatever. So we've done two so far with more to come.
I'm happy about that.
Yeah.
That's good news. This is a great beer.
And we didn't want the bacteria to be, we didn't want bacteria in this one to be just so overwhelming. We really wanted the fruit to come forward. But what is going to happen is that the Brett is going to reduce some of the fruitiness, because that's exactly why California winemakers don't like Brett in their wine, is they want things to be very fruit forward, whereas Brettanomyces will break that fruitiness down, turn it into more like earthy, mushroomy, umami type flavors. So this should change pretty dramatically over time.
Jay, does Rare Barrel use cold fermented beer for their base for anything?
We haven't done it before, but it's something that I hear brewers talk about a lot, you know, especially if you're going to do a project that you're not going to get a lot of the ale fermentation esters or phenols at the end of the day. You know, if this was ale fermented, it would be, it'd have some fruity character, but you know, a year later, you know, how much is that going to contribute? So starting with that neutral base, I think is something, especially with something like a Pilsner, brewers are very interested in. It's, you know, always combining a few of our favorite styles. And I think it's awesome. It's a great idea.
You're hearing more breweries using Pilsner. I'll be honest. I'll be the first to admit, I have no idea if we fermented this at an ale, would it be different? You know, if we took some neutral ale yeast, I mean, even California ale yeast isn't that fruity. It's a little fruity, but it's not that fruity. Like we could, I don't know if we could get away with that and have it be the same, but the first batch we did on this was 2 or 3 years ago, and it was kind of a proof of concept batch, and we served it on tap, but like I said a few minutes ago, at different events, but we never sold it, and it went over really well.
Nice.
And so at that point, it's like, well, we're not going to change it, because I mean, you know, it's like it takes a year or two to, and if it's different, you're like, well, crap, now we got to wait another year for the next batch.
Oh yeah, so. Especially if you're thinking about cycling through grapes, kind of maybe the last thing you want to do is change the process on the front end when you really want to see, you know, you want to taste a few of these beers side by side, like we're lucky to be able to do today, and see the differences from, you know, the showcase of the grapes.
Yeah.
I think, so.
Yeah, they're. You know, the quality of the fruit obviously becomes a huge part. And for those that know our beers, know that supplication and consecration are actually dried fruit.
Mm-hmm.
So that allows us to do those year round. So with this, it's all about timing, and that's with any brewery that uses fresh fruit.
Excellent. Well, I think we should take a quick break, come back, try some more beers, talk more about the spontaneous and cool ship program going here.
Good.
Sound good? All right. We'll be right back on the Sour Hour. All right. We are back on the Sour Hour. HR claims continue to rise at the Brewing Network.
Always.
That's just for me and Justin. we are live from the Cool Ship Room at the new Russian River Brewery in Windsor. Vinny is nice enough to host us in the Cool Ship Room. We're going to do an episode of Sour Hour here, and then I don't know what's going on after. It's something that, you know.
The best show on the planet is coming up afterward.
The West Wing? How's that going to work? No.
La Cerveza. What is the Spanish
thing? Entre Cerveza. No, we're not doing that one. It's that other one. You know, the one with the by far vast most listenership on the
Brew Strong.
The
Jamil Show.
Vinny, you guys were a secondary invite. Vinny invited me and the session. And I was like, I mean, do you want me? I feel like I'll feel bad if I don't bring Jay.
I think this is revisionist history, but
because we talked about the cool ship and filling it with wort, and how can you not do it on that Sour Hour?
Exactly. See?
Boom. That?
It's great.
Boom.
He just confirmed secondary. Yeah.
Well, we are back. We are tasting some of these great beers. You know, one thing that actually I was thinking before the break, and I overheard you talking about during the break, was when you do fill the cool ship, and kind of maybe one, we talked about differences between not only traditional, but maybe some differences between the way you used to do things at the pub, you would kind of homogenize it in a tank after the
wort cooler.
After the wort cooling.
Yeah.
And now you go straight to barrels. Take me through that thought process.
Yeah, so the way we do it at the downtown, and we still spontaneously ferment down there because I love what we get down there. This is a very traditional, classic, you know, Belgian, you know, lambic process, lambic style.
Mm-hmm.
But down there at the downtown pub, we'll make the same base recipe. So it's 30% unmalted wheat and 70% barley malt, all aged hops. Here we're doing it with whole cone. Downtown we're doing it with aged pellets. Mm-hmm. All of our sour beers are using aged pellets except the Intinction Sauvignon Blanc that we just had. That's treating it like a clean beer to start. But then downtown we'll run the wort through the wort cooler into what we don't call it a cool ship down there, we call it a horny tank.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a deep 3 foot, maybe 2.5 foot deep by like 18, 20 foot long. I've said this before. Quite honestly, it looks like the urinal at the ballpark.
Yep.
And then we let it sit overnight. And so there it's just picking up all the bugs and critters that are in the air from the barrel room, from all the years of making temptation, supplication, consecration. Whereas here, it's, we're bringing in the cool air from outside. And the fact that this wood was, you know, totally virgin to start, it really is a cool experiment here on where your bugs come from, because it wasn't in the wood. And the barrels are clean that we start with most of the time. Mm-hmm. We get barrels from wineries that I think the best spontaneous beer is made in barrels that are new to us from a winery that haven't had any whatever in it, temptation, supplication, consecration, or spontaneous beer in it. I really think those are the cleanest spontaneous beers we've had over the years. And so far, we're doing that here. We're bringing in all fresh barrels for these first batches of Cynambic coming out of Windsor. So then downtown, we'll come in the next day, put the wort into the barrels, and then it ferments in about a week. So it's not going into a fermenter after the horny tank downtown, mm-hmm. but it's not going into the horny tank hot like it is here. Gotcha. Here, the wort's going in just like it would in Belgium to make a lambic at 180, 190, 200 degrees. And downtown, we're running it through a wort cooler. And we started doing that because the very first time I made spontaneous beer down there, which was in 2006, it was just way too acidic and too sour. Some of those early batches of beatification were like, whoa, that was, and it took us almost 10 years to figure out how to manipulate that. And we kept bringing the temperature down, and then finally we ended up at like 64 to 68. And it works. And some people out there would say, oh, well, that's not true spontaneous beer. But I'll never forget what Jean at Cantillon told me, which was you can spontaneously ferment beer anywhere in the world. It just but you may need to do a different process. Mm-hmm. You know, whereas like I remember going to Allagash in, I think, 2007 or 2008 when they started their cool ship. And, you know, they tasting it out of the barrel was like, oh, my God, I feel like I'm in Belgium. And now that's what our wort that's slowly fermenting at the pub tastes like. But it took us a long time to get there, and it's what it tastes like here. But back then it didn't, and the process is totally different. And that's the beauty of it all, is that you can do it in totally different ways and yet still end up with a spontaneous beer. It may not be the same process, but,
sure,
you know, isn't that why what's made craft brewing like so, so unique?
My palate has changed along with beatification directly. It was, it still is, but it was my favorite sour beer the first time I had it. And it was years ago. It was, I think, the first time you even made it, Vinny. And I just fell in love with it because then I really wanted to be punched in the face with sourness. I was new to sour beer. I had had a Cantillon for the first time. And I just loved that aspect of it. And now that it's mellowed, it's still my favorite. Like, I've mellowed out too. I can't be punched in the face with sour anymore.
Now it's got so much more funk, mm-hmm. and earthiness, and there is still an acidity to it, but I'd say it's more tart as opposed to being sour. And that all came with temperature. Temperature of the wort, temperature of aging in the barrels. I'd say of everything, when you make barrel age funky beer, whether it's spontaneous, mixed, inoculated, temperature where you store your barrels is critical. Mm-hmm. And that's something that here we've got. Our barrel room here is connected to the coolers, the chillers, the coil fan coils that are in the barrel room here. They're actually connected to our glycol system that chill all of our tanks in the whole brewery. And that's also connected to our big cold box that we store all the, you know, our mainstream normal beers in, non-funky beers, and normal. That makes these all ones those, sound like the redheaded stepchild.
Yeah, yeah. You know? All those mainstream
but,
beers.
Yeah,
for all the regular IPA people. We don't have to be politically correct with our beer, even. Yeah. Can't call it normal.
No, so anyways. But
there is no normal, man.
But we're able to keep this barrel room at a firm 58 degrees, and that's going to mean that it's going to take us longer to age the beers out, but I think it makes for a softer barrel-aged beer, and that's over the years, that's what we've been working towards, is a softer barrel aged beer. And over the years, we were able to cool our barrel room down at the old production brewery more. And it took longer to age the beers out. Temptation, Supplication, Consecration, kind of our mainstream barrel aged beers, we started a couple few years ago drying them out more just through primary fermentation so that there was less sugars left in the beer when we went into barrels. And so there's less sugar for the bacteria to work on. So now there's less acidity and less pronounced acidity there to just make them softer. So,
do you think Justin's palate mirrors the market? Are people looking for subtlety? The gin pop?
I think they are now, but I mean, this may be going out on a limb, but I think kettle sours have really changed the way people drink sour beer. They can afford to pay less money for something. But you know what? Kettle sours, we make a kettle sour now, and I really like it, but it doesn't have near the complexity. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, drinking... I mean, it's lemonade and kombucha.
Yeah.
You know?
But you're right in the point that it democratizes sour beer, because not everybody, you know, sure, you'll go spend $15-$20 on a bottle of wine, but when it comes to beer, we get all weird about that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, so, but no, I think consumers have always been looking for a softer acidity. I just think it took the beer industry, craft beer industry, a long time to figure it out. I mean, I think back to some of our early batches of... Temptation's never been super acidic, and Supplication, there's been some batches. Consecration, there's definitely been some batches, and Beatification by far. Compunction, our Pluot beer, that thing was like, I remember Lauren from New Belgium coming by the pub years ago and drinking it, and she says, I think my pH dropped by one or two.
Yeah, I remember that one too.
And so, I've come to appreciate the subtlety of something soft.
Well, I think brewers do. That's why I always wonder, do brewers convince themselves that that's what the market wants because that's what they want?
Yeah.
This is a chicken or the egg argument. Yeah. I mean, I think you could go on forever about what happens. I do think, I don't know, I think that there just ends up being kind of a consensus about the things that we like as a population. And sour beer is one of those things. So in the beginning, I would recommend sour beer only to beer nerds. If they had never had sour beer before, I would go, you got to try this. It's so weird. It's going to blow your mind. Yeah. I would never give it to a beginner. Nowadays, if somebody tells me they don't like beer, I'm more inclined to grab a sour beer because they're a little more nuanced and a little more subtle. I'm more inclined to go, okay, you might actually like this, and you're not going to believe that it's beer. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying in the early days, I wouldn't have done that. Even the first time I had a Rosé de Gambrinus.
Yeah.
Punched me in the face, this beer. I would never have given that to a non-beer nerd. Nowadays, I can. I think
that's where I don't think kettle sours are a bad thing. Some brewers will disagree with me, but that, you know, they're good training wheels.
They wean you,
and I hope that all of these you know, kettle sours out there will then make people want to drink, you know, the classic barrel age styles that we started making, you know, 20 years ago or whatever. And I don't want to like devalue how hard it is to make a kettle sour.
Sure.
But we freaking nailed it on the first batch.
Oh. Nice.
It was like, wow, that was easy.
What's the deal, guys?
Don't know why I waited 20 years to do this.
Yeah, I was a little nervous going into it because I was like, geez, what if I screw this up? Mm. You know, it's easy to make a barrel-aged sour beer, but I can't even do a kettle sour. And it totally worked great. So I was pretty excited because our kettle sour it's got roses, violets, black pepper, honey, and elderberry juice in it. So it's got all these layers of flavor in there, and it's low alcohol. And so they have their time and place. But as long as the brewery is charging like regular prices and not trying to make it out to be a, you know, barrel-aged beer, because then the consumer gets duped. And so that's the worst thing that can happen, is that the consumer, you know, is like, well, you know, shoot, I just paid, you know, $15 for a beer that was kind of thin and, you know, and light. And then that's okay, that's how the beer is. But to me, there's a there's a value and there's a reason why we have to charge what we charge for a barrel aged beer that's we've been making for a year, two, 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, just to clarify that, really what you're talking about is the amount of time it takes you, the space it takes you, the real estate. That's an investment on your part that, of course, has to be paid for.
Just like wine.
And so a kettle sour is done just a bit quicker and doesn't take all of that real estate. So in other words, it costs you less to make.
We make Shiso Italian, our kettle sour, in, I think, 18 days. Mm. So it's like making Blind Pig's 18 mm-hmm. days, Pliny's 21. So it's a normal time.
So if we were doing a normal show, normal time, and maybe we weren't sitting in the cool ship room, I would ask you a lot more questions about this, but I know I would kind of be remiss. A lot of our listeners are interested in kettle sour beers. What do you think, what research did you do beforehand that you think led you to nail it on that first go around?
You know, there's a lot of conjecture on whether you need to, you know, like put CO2 into the wort to protect it from the wort from going, you know, basically septic to mm-hmm. where it gets that baby diaper, you know, quality, you know, foot's, you know, sweaty foot sock, you know, gym sock.
There might
sock.
Be some of it going on in this room right now.
And, so that was definitely something we looked towards and opted to charge the wort with CO2, blanket it overnight, cap the kettle stack. One of my favorite kettle sours is Athena. Mm-hmm. From Creature Comforts. Yeah, and
it was just so there last week.
We did a collaboration with them around New Year's. They helped us with the Sonoma Pride and brewed a version of Sonoma Pride, and then we reciprocated for a fundraiser. And they're just amazing people, and they do like such a great way to run their company. But I definitely paid a lot of attention to how Athena's made and some of my other favorite kettle sours. But
except for Blake. Blake's just okay. That's the official opinion of the Brewing Network. Yeah.
so that was one of the big things we looked at. What I was most unsure about, and the only way to learn this was to do it, was how long to let it sour in the kettle. So we boiled the wort to kill anything that was in the wort, ran it through the wort cooler, back to the kettle with the bacteria, and then let it sit overnight. And that to me is the hardest thing, because then we tried a different bacteria for the second batch, mm-hmm. exact same amount of time, and got more total acidity, lower pH. And so that was just with a different strain of bacteria. So that's going to be the moving target for us, is how do we, make it more consistent mm-hmm. over time. And we made the switch only because I wanted to try a different type of bacteria.
Sure.
And we're doing some other experiments right now in our lab on kettle souring that maybe we can come back in a month or two or three whenever we figure out if these experiments worked and talk about them, because some of them are really interesting.
Awesome.
That are like first time being done in America.
Oh, that's
stuff.
Cool.
So
what is the goal? Like, I mean, obviously you want the best flavor, the best expression of acidity in your beers, but you know, some brewers will, you know, take their sweet time to get to the total acidity that they want. Some people want to get there as fast as possible.
Yeah, my goal was to get there as fast as possible, but I'm trying to, and if there's a critique on many kettle sours, including our own, is to hopefully minimize that kind of yogurt acidity mm-hmm. that a lot of kettle sours have.
Yeah,
and
for
so
sure.
That to me is what we need to work towards softening a little bit. So
awesome.
Enough about kettle sours.
All right.
Let's talk about Intinction Merlot.
I don't even need to be here. That's exactly right. Stole the words right out of my mouth.
Your mind.
We do have Intinction number 2, or I don't know how you differentiate
them. Yeah, we call
them.
It Intinction Merlot.
Intinction Merlot. This is really, really good.
Wonderful. Yeah, so you can see the color. This is a half of the beer is actually the Cynambic recipe that's in the cool ship right now, and then the and done spontaneously, fermented spontaneously initially before we added the grapes to it, and then the other half was the Cynambic recipe but fermented with Saccharomyces, with conventional yeast, and then there was all aged in Merlot barrels and then at harvest. So It was probably in barrels for 6-7 months before we took it out of barrels, added the Merlot grapes to it. So one of the great things about our new brewery is we have a custom crush winery behind us. So I can get grapes delivered there and forklift down. They'll crush and press or destem whatever I want, all for a couple cases of beer.
Not too bad.
So we'll huge, work for beer.
Huge, huge shout out to Grand Cru. It's also really cool because there's 5 tasting rooms there.
Wow.
And so it's a custom crush facility, and then they have an alternating proprietorship. So for those that are listening or watching, that's when a winery or brewery has a bunch of different breweries or wineries making wine and beer. And they, and like one day it may be winery A, and the next day is winery B. And so they have their tasting room set up that way. Wow. And they all have roll-up garage doors that go that look out basically to us.
Wow.
Well, now there's another building there, but so they do all the crushing for us, and so I had the grapes delivered. They destemmed them, and we didn't crush them, so we left them whole berry. So in winemaking, that would be called carbonic maceration. And I know what you're thinking.
I was like, were you watching? Carry on.
Yeah. Anyways.
Another HR violation.
Did you see that I paused before I said that? Because I have a friend in San Diego, and he thinks the other way. And
he's like,
you know me. Master what?
You know me well, Benny. You know me well.
So it's whole grapes going in at about 2 to 3 pounds per gallon of beer, and then it sits for about 4 months. So there's another fermentation that happens, and then we empty the barrels and then bottle condition it. And so this is still sitting aging in bottles too. This was just bottled maybe a month ago, April 26th.
Oh wow.
So not even, so it's got a little bit of time to sit. It's not fully carbonated yet. But what I love about it is that you get that tannin, like on the finish from the grapes.
Oh yeah,
and aside from the color,
is that the, what's the difference between macerating grapes and not in terms of what you're looking for
in winemaking? And my goal here by leaving them whole, whole berry. When you do it in wine, they actually leave them on the stems, so you literally add the whole grape cluster to the fermenter, and then add the yeast, and then eventually the yeast penetrates the berries, and you literally have thousands of fermentations going on in the tank, and then eventually each berry will explode.
Wow.
From the CO2. So I was hoping to kind of get that intense fruitiness, and that's what carbonic maceration gives you. And in wine, they're called Beaujolais Nouveaux. You typically make them with Beaujolais grapes, and then they're always released on the third Thursday of November in France, and they're really quick. You drink them right away. And so by incorporating carbonic maceration into brewing, the intent was to get some really nice fruitiness, but then also eventually after the grapes break open, you get some of the tannins.
Okay.
But we didn't want it to be like, I didn't want it to be so much tannins to where it was like drinking a young Petit Sirah wine,
sure,
or something, to where it's really dry. And, you know, and tannins are something that aren't often talked about in wine or in beer, but they're actually big right now in brewing, especially the hazy IPAs, because the polyphenols, those are tannins.
Okay.
And so there's a higher polyphenol level in IPAs, and there's an even higher level in the hazy IPAs just because of the sheer amount of hops that are going into a hazy, juicy IPA.
Can I just say, though, that even though that's the explanation of the difference between macerating and not, from an anthropological perspective, it was really invented by a lazy Frenchman who was like, what if we just throw the grapes with the stems and everything into the barrel? You can't tell me that's not how it was invented.
How bad could it be?
Yeah, it's fine. I'm late.
The yeast is already making the wine.
Yeah.
Let's have it crush the grapes.
The Frenchman had a date that night, probably,
yes,
right?
Yes, I'm telling you, I can almost guarantee you that's how it happened. It resulted in something wonderful, but it was lazy.
I knew it would work out.
Yeah.
Everything.
Well, I have more questions. I think Justin's got to have more impressions of French people.
Yes, thank you.
I always sound German. It will work out.
Yeah.
Let's get to a break. Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. We'll be right back on the Sour Hour.
What?
All right. We are back wrapping up the Sour Hour portion of the evening with Vinny. Fortunately for him, he's still got a few hours left with the hooligans of the session.
Oh, you know that show is going to end well, Vinny.
Been here since noon.
Yeah. Drinking beer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hanging out. Vinny, you've been a great host.
What did you have for lunch, Justin?
Oh, I had...
STS pills.
At least two STS pills. And I think it's Vinny's special fried chicken. It's fried chicken day here.
Yep.
Really?
Wow. And it's not on the menu, but I saw it go by me, and I was like, what is that? That looks amazing. I went to the bar, and they said, yeah, that's our special, and apparently it's your recipe?
Yeah.
Ooh.
It is my recipe.
Very cool.
So luckily I ate.
I've been on a kick. I had a salad. How stupid am I?
I know. I thought of that, man. No, it's going to be a long...
I probably should have had a burger, fried chicken or something.
We're going to have a good time. It'll be fine.
Well, I'll be a free agent after this, so I can run up some chicken up here, no problem.
Here we go.
If chicken is allowed, you know, in the culture.
I think so.
Yeah.
Just throw it in there.
Man, this cinnamon tastes awfully greasy.
Yeah.
Remember Charlie Papazian's, you know, the New Complete Joy Home Brewing, and he had the cock beer, the chicken.
Oh, that's
like,
right.
Where you like, I don't know if it was like chicken bones or whatever.
Yeah.
I always skipped over the recipe.
Of course. Yeah. Charlie was kind of crazy back in the day. And yes, I remember that recipe specifically.
Yeah, in there. That was always like the wild, crazy recipe. That was nuts.
Yeah. Poultry, you know, on the side of beer, I think it's fine. But in the beer might be a different story.
Yeah.
But yeah, we've got some great beers. We just finished up with Intinction Merlot, and that was amazing. One thing that I just wanted to mention that I think we might have glossed by is that is also, so that's Merlot barrel and Merlot grape.
Merlot barrels and grapes.
But there's a base difference there where the Intinction Sauvignon Blanc was kind of a modified, less bitter Pilsner, and then the Intinction Merlot was... kind of a mix of like the cinnambic beers.
Yeah, it was cinnambic kind of mixed. I mean, some of it was spontaneously fermented, and then some of it we inoculated with Brett and bacteria. And like we were talking about in between sessions, there was, to me, the Sauvignon Blanc is just so much more acidic, and yet it was just Brett. But the Sauvignon Blanc grapes brought so much acidity to it. And then the Merlot was just so much softer.
Sure.
And yet there was those tannins, the robust tannin quality and the richness and the aroma and the finish. And I love the Sauvignon Blanc and the Merlot. I'm really excited about both of them because it also is kind of my background too, and my winemaking background, and I'm bringing them back. And, you know, I used to make grape beers as a home brewer all the time, but I didn't make them sour and funky. We did do a Merlot or a Muscat Canale. What's the Cantillon one with Muscat grapes?
Pignerone. Remember?
Is it? Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll trust you because I don't remember. Yeah. Yep. So we did that once or twice in the early years of Russian River, and the grapes were from a wild Muscat vine outside of our old house up in Geyserville. So that was kind of cool. Grew the grapes and whatnot. But it's really great to like connect with the grape growers on these two. And like the Merlot, it's a small family vineyard. They have 1 acre of Merlot, and I'm buying like 90% of it this year coming up.
It's something they never thought would happen, that a brewery is buying.
Yeah, probably not,
you know.
And last year it was a struggle to just get 1 ton out of them because it's hard to find Merlot. I love Pinot Noir. Anyone that's been out drinking wine with me know that I'm a huge Pinot fan, but I'm also a huge Merlot fan. And Merlot totally got the shaft after
Sideways.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
yeah. It,
that movie,
goddamn Thomas Hayden Church.
It killed the Merlot, or not killed, but it severely wounded the Merlot industry overnight, single handedly.
Yeah,
isn't that really crazy?
And Merlot is such a beautiful grape and wine. And so we were lucky enough to be able to get some Merlot barrels, and maybe going forward we won't be able to use all Merlot barrels, but the grapes are what count. We might need to fall back on like some cab barrels or whatnot. So
God forbid.
Speaking of cab, that's a consecration.
Well, just real quick, because there's a lot to talk about with this beer, but I wanted to ask quickly, because Scott mentioned at the break about the peppery note of that Merlot beer, and I wonder where that's coming from.
Yeah, I mean, interestingly, Merlot doesn't always have never has. Pepper Reed's normally Petite Syrah.
Okay.
And but if it was Petite Syrah, it would have been way more tannic, because Petite Syrah is like the most tannic wine grapes there are. Mm-hmm. So it just must have been the interaction between the beer, the barrels, the grapes, the oxygen.
Okay.
Jay and I were talking off air about, do we gas the barrels before we fill them? And we don't. We put beer in the barrels full of oxygen, but fermentation starts pretty quick because we have some residual sugar in there, and we add fresh Brett, and so it kicks off CO2 within a day or two.
It's gone by the time you fill it to the top too.
Yeah,
similar.
And there's only maybe 2 or 3 gallons worth of air in the head of space of the barrel, and then the fermentation starts because we add fresh Brett. In most of the beers, but then like half of that base beer for Intinction Merlot was done spontaneously, so that took a week. But then again, you drink a spontaneous beer and it's not oxidized right away, even though it sat for a week. I remember Jean telling me that they once had a batch of lambic at Cantillon that took 6 months before it started fermenting.
Wow.
Like, I don't know, maybe because it's cold there, but like, I don't want to even look at what the top it must have been.
Or would you have waited that long?
Right. On month four, you're like,
fail.
Give up. Yeah, fail.
I'm just going to dump it.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah. Did he say how it turned out?
Although at month four in Belgium, the season was already over, so they couldn't have emptied the barrels and remade that batch.
Okay.
So you might as well just
ride it out.
Let it ride.
Just roll the dice and ride it out.
Just fill it with some IPA.
And yeah. Because they make IPA all the time at Cantillon.
Yeah.
Yes. Cantillon IPA coming to your bottle
hazy,
shop.
Hazy IPA.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Too bad we just missed April Fool's.
Yeah.
Yeah. Never really done it.
Yeah.
Well, the pepper character was really nice, so I was just curious, but yeah.
Yeah, normally Merlot is more dusty. Mm. That's how it's described, and people go, how do you describe dust? And it's like, well, if you're on a dirt road and the car goes by and you get a little bit of dust in your nose and your mouth, that's the dusty quality that Merlot. And that's what I like about Merlot. And if I'm out at a restaurant now, I often will drink Pinot, and you almost never see Merlot. But if you do see Merlot, if I do see Merlot, I almost always will order
you
a glass. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm a sucker for, but most Merlots are made really well. Like, if someone's making a Merlot, they're doing it really good. Mm. And a really well-made Merlot is probably 50% of the price is a really well-made Cabernet.
Wow.
So, and, Merlot is one of the main components of a Bordeaux blend.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, if you get a Bordeaux blend, there's going to be a fair amount of Merlot in there along with the Cab and Malbec Petit Verdot.
Okay. Okay. Wine country knowledge, too.
Yeah. Speaking of getting nice bottles delivered to your table.
This one.
We've got this one.
Now you can look at the...
Now we can talk about things.
Look at the bottle.
Vinny's been keeping the date from us.
Okay. We have a consecration.
Well, but...
It's not even a bottle date. It's the batch number.
This is a large format consecration bottle.
So what's the batch number?
This is batch 1x1.
Are you kidding?
This is the very first bottling of consecration ever.
Wait, we're live?
What?
Okay, no.
Yeah.
Bat down the hatches.
Yeah.
At least we're at the back of the brewery, so people listening will have a little head start on that.
Yeah. Batch?
Yeah.
Mama mia.
And our reserve bottle room is literally right below us.
Wow.
And so I actually wanted to turn it into an apartment. And
my RV's out front already. Yeah. I'll just move in down
there.
I
did see the RV.
our project manager and architects didn't think that the town would go along with it because we're zoned industrial, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, come on.
So anyways, we needed
you figure Windsor's got to be on your side by this point, right?
Oh, they are.
Probably
they're awesome.
Could have got away with it.
But, it's a break room.
But we also needed a place to store our reserve bottles. And this is so much more romantic because you have to walk through the barrel room.
Yeah.
And it's the same 58 degree air that's cooling underneath us.
That's so nice.
And anyways, I was looking for something special.
It's incredible.
That's what I found.
So this is, what are we talking, like 2005?
Would have been about 2008.
Eight.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's held up unbelievably well.
Yeah. And like all the, it's a great example of how acidity really drops off. Mm-hmm. Because like I was saying earlier, our sour barrel aged beers back then were way more tart and acidic and sour than they are now. And a lot of it was temperature. Some of it was just, we were adding too much bacteria. some of it was we were finishing. We would start. We would go into the barrels at 4 Plato. So that's for homebrewers 1.016/1016. Mm-hmm. And that was just a ton of sugar for the bacteria and the Brett to work off of. And we were just making tons of acidity. Mm. And but now, you know, all this time later, all that acidity's dropped off. You get the rich chocolate and tobacco notes. Mm-hmm. And
raisin.
And yeah. And
it's still there. Like, I don't know, firmly might be an overstatement, but it's definitely still there. Maybe because it was so high initially.
Yeah.
I have, yeah. I'm just going to tell you this because we're good enough friends now. I have a love-hate relationship with this beer, and it's the only beer of yours that I have that with. So I will always buy it 2 bottles at a time. So I open one, of course, when I buy it. And sometimes I absolutely love it. And sometimes I'm like, no, it's not my Russian River. And then I hold on to the other one like you did with this one, and it comes and it does come back. This is the one beer that I just argue with myself about.
I can tell you why.
Okay.
Exactly, because I have the same thing.
Okay.
When you make, and I'm curious what Jay says, maybe Rare Barrel's different or whatever, but because we're so focused on matching specific beers with a style of barrel, so Consecrations Cabernet, Supplications Pinot, Temptation Chard, now Intinction, a lot of times we can't get the barrels at the right time. So, like, I think that's the one thing that is brushed over a lot of times with consumers, and I think we as brewers have done a bad job of educating the consumers on this, is that when you make a barrel-aged beer, the barrel is like the 5th ingredient. Well, maybe it's the 6th ingredient if you're adding fruit. Mm-hmm. But there's a season to get barrels. Jay knows this. You can, I mean, yeah, there's some brokers out there that have barrels year-round, but the barrels that you're buying in like September or October aren't the best barrels from a broker. Mm-hmm. Wineries, you'll never be able to get barrels, or almost never from a winery in September because it's harvest. They've mm-hmm. emptied all their barrels in the spring and maybe summer to bottle all that wine. So that's the best time as a brewer to buy barrels.
So you should be looking at what, like April, May?
And yeah. That's when we buy it, like, and so for this beer, there's been times in the past when the Cabernet barrels from the winery we get them from, we got them, we saved them, and then we just didn't do a good job of blending, like, first use, second use, third use. So there have been batches where they're 100% first use to us, and so there's just way more tannins and too much of everything.
Yeah,
and so the beer, like, in hindsight, we should be, or maybe if this kind of happens again, we should label it differently to be like, you know, age this guy longer, do something to tell the consumer that it's a bigger mouthfeel and flavor
for
this particular batch, because I know the batches you're talking about, because I empty every barrel myself.
Okay.
And I taste every barrel, and like, we don't different than a lot of breweries, we don't blend like every, like, we make Temptation, Supplication, and Consecration by the batch. And so the only thing that we're blending are barrels from the same batch of 56 wine barrels. Now there's more because the tanks are bigger here. Mm-hmm. But, and the only reason we don't include a barrel is if the barrel tastes like crap and it's acetic and it's gone, you know, to balsamic vinegar, then we dump it and then we just chuck the barrel. And
otherwise everything goes in,
and the really good barrels and the mediocre, I don't want to say they're mediocre, but you know, there are barrels that are, I'll be honest, they're less than, you know, the really good ones,
solid but unspectacular.
Yeah, but they also kind of sometimes, that's like the filler barrels you need. You know, we still use a ton of Cascade and Centennial hops in Pliny, Blind Pig, a lot of our beers. And those hops compared to Citra, Mosaic, Simcoe, you know, blah, 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 all the new designer hops, those beers are downright, or those hops are like pedestrian. Mm. But they're really good for adding, you know, just body and fullness and the, kind of their filler hops in a really nice way.
Okay.
And so sometimes having a barrel that's, you know, just kind of plain Jane.
Yeah.
It's not bad because it carries the beer. And also it might be that a really spectacular barrel and, you know, something that's here, neither of them are, they're both good. Mm-hmm. This one I would say tastes great. but the two together ends up making a total blend. But when consecration, whereas compared to supplication or temptation, if we are 100% first use barrels, maybe a little on the oaky side.
Mm-hmm.
Supplication, we could all day long go all first use barrels and you would never know it because the barrels are so much softer, more subtle. The beer is more subtle, whereas consecration is just this big brash. It's 10% alcohol.
I see.
It's got so much more going on, and that's why.
Well, your mediocre barrel analogy is really a metaphor for life. I think, like, we can't all be rock stars, right? Like, we need people who, like, just toe the line.
I was thinking of a sports
in
team.
In life, like, we need people that toe the line. So
the Brewing Network.
good. Not everyone can be Jay Goodwin.
Not everybody can be Jay.
So true.
But then, just to round it out, like, this is the only beer of yours that, to me, it just fluctuates so much. Yeah. Like, I, your other beers fluctuate, but those fluctuations are nuanced.
Yeah.
I still always know what I'm going to get, and this is the one where I'm like, all right, let's see what we got this year.
There's the other thing about consecration is it's lower in carbonation. That's actually from Matt Bonney, who passed away. month and a half back from Seattle.
Yeah.
He always like begged me to do consecration still. And I love consecration out of the barrels. And we will do it someday. I'm sure we will. We'll do a still version. Almost like a Belgian lambic brewer will bottle lambic.
Mm-hmm.
You almost never see it. But when they do, lambic is typically bottled still or with just a tiny, tiny bit of CO2.
Yeah.
This beer is really nice that way. So we do actually add less priming sugar, maybe by like 15% less than supplication.
Mm-hmm.
But because I do think it is a better beer. It's already so big with the mouthfeel, with everything that's in it. And then if you add CO2 and it's very filling. But yeah. I would like to do a version of it at some point where it's like a still version. So
you should.
We served a still, I think, Temptation once at a beer dinner we did. And that was pretty cool. To serve a still beer that we had pulled from a barrel.
I would love that.
Yeah.
And just to, if I can, just a quick shout out to Matt Bonney too, just so a little bit of his legacy living on. And Scott, I'm not even sure that you know this, but Matt Bonney is the one who introduced me to the beauty and the value and the quality of a direct draw draft system the first time I went up to his bar. So years before we ever opened the Hop Grenade, I saw his setup there. And his direct draw draft system was so beautiful. And you could see the kegs right behind the glass. And if they would change a keg, they would just throw away the line and put on a new line. And the whole thing was about quality and cleanliness. And then, of course, near and dear to my heart, a little bit of laziness, like make it easy. And that was years before we ever opened, but it stuck with me.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if you remember, Scott, but when we were looking for locations for the Hop Grenade, I refused to look at any location that would not allow for a direct draw draft system.
Could I forget possibly? No, that was maybe the single biggest sticking point.
If you
want to even call it that, yeah. we were all on the same page.
It was a quality thing, and I just wanted to just give a shout out, respect to Matt Bonney, because if it weren't for him and his bar and my experience there, I wouldn't have known that, and we might have lines running everywhere now.
It's amazing that was people weren't doing that.
Well, he wasn't the first to do it by any means. I think the way he did it was done so well.
And he just made it a integral part of their business. I mean, our cold box downtown and here in Windsor, same thing, direct draw, no trunk lines.
Yeah.
Here we have three bars pulling from one cold box. That whole restaurant here was designed around the cold box to have the three bars.
Yes.
And then from there, we built everything else around that.
And it's amazing because the scale of this place. This is a campus.
But it was still like a principle not to let go of.
Exactly.
And at that point, I hadn't even met Matt, by the way. I just was experiencing his bar.
Yeah.
And it changed my life. I just changed the way I look at draft.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Absolutely.
To Matt. Yep. Rest his soul.
Yeah, absolutely. To Matt Bonney. Yeah. Yeah. We toast Matt and Lynn, his wife, a lot. Lynn's carrying the Toronado on. And,
yeah. Cheers.
So, to Matt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So...
Mm-hmm.
Well, so how are we doing on time?
We're great. I'll stop derailing your show, maybe.
No, that's great. This is by far the least work I've ever done.
Yeah, the host of the show is pulling a Frenchman. It'll be fine.
Throw it all in there.
He's the carbonic maceration of
a
podcast host. Podcasting.
He's taking my throne.
You know, I have more questions, but I think that's the place to end right there. So let's just check out. Vinny, thanks so much for having the Sour Hour here, the most popular podcast on the Growing Network. I'm so sorry that...
Oh, finally we got a reaction from Bebo.
You have, this tour to do later, but it's been a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Wow, what a place. If you guys get the chance to come out to Windsor, I hear there's some great wineries around here. No. Come to the New Russian River. It's amazing, and you'll go on the tour, see the Cool Ship Room where we had this episode recording, which has got to be the coolest place ever.
Take the guided tour, and you get to come in here and drink a beer at the bar.
And there's a restaurant, tasting room, gift shop.
Really an amazing place you've built here.
Thanks.
Wow.
Thanks.
Before you sign off entirely, just for those listening, I'm going to try my best. I wanted to get some video of the entire facility, but I really want to do that justice, so that's going to happen another time. But what I will do on our Brewing Network YouTube page, which is just youtube.com/brewingnetwork, is I'm going to take some video just of the Cool Ship Room so that you can see where we are and what we've been talking about the whole time. So by the time you hear this, it should be up on our YouTube page, youtube.com/brewingnetwork.
And I don't know what our exact YouTube page is. Russian River Brewing is blah blah blah
official.
Anyways, if Natalie was here, she'll be here for the next session.
She'll know. Yeah.
She time lapsed the filling of the Cool Ship this morning.
She showed me that too. Yes.
Yeah. Or we can send you.
You know what? Let's do both, and I'll put that up there too because it's really special that we're here. It's special that this room exists, and it's special that we're here doing it. So I want you all to be able to see it. So
I'm a lot more comfortable now than I was an hour ago.
Yes.
Good. Leading into the next show.
Evo agrees. Yeah. This is the time to be in here for sure. So,
my favorite thing right now is the reflection of the windows off the wart. It's absolutely beautiful. The trees across the street in the wart reflecting. It's really cool.
Beautiful kind of twisted oak just right over there. Yeah. It's like the reflecting pool in DC kind of vibe.
It's really a statue
of Vinny.
Yeah. Right there. Sometimes there's a crane in the background because that's our rigging company across the street.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, big shout out to Precision Crane.
Hey.
Those guys are badass.
That's not too bad. You have some good neighbors.
Yeah. We loved having them as they pretty much lived here for 18 months. They were on the job site every week.
Wow. Yeah.
Sometimes for like weeks in a row. So moving tanks in and frames and this and that. And so I think I put a couple of their kids through. Natalie and I put a couple of their kids through college.
There you go.
This last year.
We're going to be talking about the building of the brewery and a lot of that construction and the different ways you did it on the session. So if you typically...
I left that for you, Justin.
If you typically only listen to Jay, you might want to listen to the session just this time because it'll be a good companion show to this one.
I'll cut that out in post.
Yeah.
Well, it's been a special day. I hope this batch turns out, although Justin's the closest person to it, so I don't think it will. But, Vinny, thanks so much
again. We're going to have to do, like, some occasional sampling where I'll bring some samples down for the Sour Hour and see how the batch turned out.
We're going to talk about this on my show because I had a specific statement to Vinny about there being wort in this thing, and we're going to talk about that on my show.
Yep.
There's going to be some long beard hairs in there, maybe. I'm not going to say whose they come from, but
it's John.
He's going to be on the next show.
All right.
Well, thanks so much, Vinny. Really appreciate it. Thanks for having us here.
And appreciate it a lot.
Until next time, stay sour.